What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to a new episode. Today's episode is like kind of Christmas themed. It's like in a horrible way because this is a true crime podcast, but
yeah,
still kind of Christmas themed. I actually found a show called Homicide for the Holidays, which is like, again,
cringe.
So yeah, not good.
That is cringe, yeah.
But I found it. I was researching this case and found that it aired. This case was talked about on that show, and it actually is like a decently well done show, in my opinion. At least the one episode I watched, like, it covered the details of the crime and all of that, and it had one of the victim's family members on it, so like,
okay,
it was pretty well done. But yeah, that's the name of the show if you want to watch it. But today we're talking about the Dayton, Ohio Christmas killings.
Okay.
And this is just crazy. So let's get into it. Sometimes teenagers might be bored during the holidays, right? They're home from school, maybe wanting to avoid family, avoid responsibilities. So
they
might do things like getting into trouble by, you know, hanging out on private property or like messing around somewhere they're not supposed to.
Yeah, it happens.
But what a group of teens and young adults would do in December 1992 in Dayton, Ohio was so beyond heinous that it haunted the community for years. This is the story of the Dayton Christmas killings by a group who called themselves the Posse. Yeah.
Okay. I think that that is very silly sounding.
Yeah. So this group, the main members of this group, were 19-year-old Marvellus Keene, his 16-year-old girlfriend, Laura Taylor, and their friends, another couple, 19-year-old DeMarcus Smith and 20-year-old Heather Matthews.
Okay.
In December 1992, they were bored and out for blood. And the worst part was they did not have a motive. They were killing for fun, picking victims at random, and doing it just because they wanted to.
That's so sick and maniacal, and honestly almost makes it worse just to be so, like, haphazardly killing people.
Yeah. And they would, like, later try to say that they were doing it to, like, rob people, but the amount of money / things that they got from these killings, from the people that they killed, like, it's so clear that that was not the motive.
And not only that, but there's four of them, and if they're just like picking off victims one by one, you could overpower one person with four people, so you don't need to kill them.
Yeah, absolutely. It is said that all four members of this group were estranged from their families, so they kind of, you know, were hanging out together, they were getting closer and closer. They would kind of live wherever they could, like staying at friends' couches, things like that.
Gotcha.
They were kind of just out there. And some sources refer to them as a gang. I don't really want to use that word because I feel like gang has so many other meanings and, like,
yeah,
you know, it's
more totally organized. Like, yeah, even though it's terrible, like, it's more organized. It's bigger. There's like a chain of command, and
yeah, and like, so this kind of was a, like, quote-unquote gang, but I feel like more gang in the sense of just like the word gang being like a noun, or, you know, like not an actual gang.
So
I tried to not call it a gang, but if I accidentally do, just know that, like, it's not your typical, like, gang. Yeah,
right. It's like, how do you describe that without saying something, you know, a little out there.
Yeah. But this group started their rampage on December 24th, 1992, Christmas Eve. Their first victim was 34-year-old General Motors worker Joseph Wilkerson. So basically, their plan was to use the two girls of the group, Laura Taylor and Heather Matthews, to seduce Wilkerson and trick him into thinking that, you know, they wanted to sleep with him.
Damn.
And this worked because on Christmas Eve, Joseph Wilkerson took the girls back to his house. But as soon as they were there, their plan began. They tied him to his bed's headboard using electrical cords. And once he was restrained, Marvellous Keene and DeMarcus Smith came into the house.
Terrifying.
They all began to ransack the place, looking for anything they could steal. And then Marvellous went into the bedroom and shot Joseph Wilkerson in the chest with a 25 caliber gun.
Wow.
In their ransacking of the house, they ended up finding another gun, a 32 caliber gun. And that gun was used to shoot Joseph Wilkerson a second time. And it was later determined that Laura Taylor, the 16-year-old, was the one who did that.
Yikes. And why? That just proves, like, she just wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. He had already been shot. He was already incapacitated. Like,
yeah.
That was just for the thrill. Yeah.
Yeah. What is even more sick is that the group didn't move on. So instead of leaving the home, they basically set up at Joseph's house while he was just laying in the bedroom dead.
Oh my God.
And they remained there for the next 3 days, kind of using it as their, like, home base. And they were partying. They were ransacking the place. They were, like, eating his food. They stole his car and drove it around town. Like, jeez. They were, like, using his home and his belongings after murdering him.
Wow.
Joseph Wilkerson's murder was only the first of three that the downtown posse would commit on Christmas Eve. Their next victim was 18-year-old Danita Gillette. Danita was using a payphone near a neighborhood market in West Dayton when she was approached by the group of four. And they began to rob her, forcing her to give them her belongings, and she complied. But instead of leaving her alone after that, because she did, she gave them everything she had, they shot her 5 times.
Oh my God.
They murdered her in cold blood for no other reason than just wanting to.
Because she gave them everything they asked for, everything she had. So yep. Again, just wanted to kill.
Yeah. All the group ended up stealing from her was her shoes, her book bag, her coat, and 50 cents.
So sad.
Yeah. They killed her because they wanted to kill, not to rob her. Danita was a mother of a 2-year-old girl. And she was just living her life that night when she was robbed and murdered. Her sister Rhonda later said, quote, "All she said was, don't shoot me. And they shot her anyway. She gave them everything that she had. I just wish they would have spared my sister."
Yeah. And they should have.
They really should have. There's no reason for what they did. Rhonda later recalled that she, her niece, aka Danita's daughter, and their mom were waiting for Danita to get home from work on Christmas Eve. And around 10 p.m., they got a phone call, presumably from Danita calling from the payphone. But there was no one on the other line. And Danita was late, so eventually Rhonda ended up taking her niece home for the night, saying that they'd celebrate Christmas the next day. But that would never happen because Danita wasn't late. She had been murdered.
Wow.
The downtown posse did not stop there, though. Their last victim for the night of Christmas Eve was going to be Heather Matthews' ex-boyfriend, Jeffrey Wright. The group located Jeffrey outside of his house, and they approached him, and DeMarcus Smith, Matthews' current boyfriend, shot Jeffrey in the legs 4 times.
Jeez.
They then fled and headed back to Joseph Wilkerson's house. But thankfully, Jeffrey was not fatally injured and he was able to get over to his neighbor's house. And he ended up surviving despite the 4 gunshot wounds he suffered.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. After spending the night at the Wilkerson house, the group continued their spree on Christmas Day. Their next victim was Laura Taylor's ex-boyfriend, Richmond Maddox. So Taylor tricked Richmond into leaving his parents' house to go for a ride in his car with her. So he was driving, but unbeknownst to him, at first at least, Keene, Smith, and Matthews were in a car behind, following.
Oh my God.
He soon became aware of the car following him, so he started trying to, like, speed up to get away. And I want to say some sources say that Laura Taylor and Richmond Maddox were, like, still dating. I don't think that was the case, but I'm thinking maybe like she was kind of pretending to be like amicable or like nice to him, like, oh, we're friends, or like maybe we'll get back together. I don't know, but I feel like that's kind of what she probably did to lure him to go on a drive with her.
Right.
So he started speeding up once he realized that they were being followed, but that's when Laura Taylor, 16 years old, pulled a gun on him.
Oh my gosh.
She pointed the gun at his head and pulled the trigger.
Jeez.
This obviously killed him and led the car to spin out of control towards a tree.
Yeah.
And she was able to jump out of the car before it crashed.
Well, that was pretty idiotic of her, though, because she could have killed herself.
Yeah. But Richmond Maddox was dead. After Richmond's body was found, police learned from his family that he had previously dated a girl named Laura Taylor. They then spoke to her family and they found out that they had no idea where she was. They thought she had disappeared and they wanted her to be found. So from the sound of it, it doesn't sound like she necessarily like disappeared and they were concerned that she had been like taken. But they were kind of like, yeah, she ran away. She isn't like
here like right they're now. Used to her rebellious nature and they're like, what can we do about
it? Yeah, it kind of seemed like that. So,
which like, oh no, I mean, she's 16, so I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, that would not happen in my household. But at the same time, it's like, you know, what can you do? You bring them home, they run away. You bring them home, they run away. Like,
yeah, you can only do so much. And so it seems like they were like, you know, we want her to be found. We're not saying like, ignore her.
Right.
But also like, it wasn't an urgent, like we're reporting her missing. We think she was taken, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So police became concerned that something had happened to her and that she was in danger. So the search for her kind of began.
Okay.
At this point, the detectives were not quite connecting the murders. So Joseph Wilkerson had not been found because they were still holing up at his house.
Right.
And Danita and Richmond had been shot with different caliber guns. One with the gun that the group had, and then Richmond was shot with the .32 caliber that they found at Joseph's house.
That's like kind of sad though, because if it's Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and no one had seen him.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That is really sad.
And no one's like, hey, where's my brother, my son, or
yeah, that is really sad.
I know, I was like, at first I was like, oh, well, it's Christmas. You know, he's not, expected at work or anything like that. And I was like, wait, he's expected to be. I mean, not everybody has family. Not everybody does things with their family, but that's just sad.
Yeah, it is a little sad.
A little more sad for him, even though.
Yeah. You know. Very sad. But yeah, so he hadn't been found. Danita and Richmond were shot with different guns. So even though there had been two murders in the area, they were like, you know, they're not being connected yet.
Right.
After murdering Richmond Maddox, the group returned to the Wilkerson house where they remained, and they didn't commit any more murders on Christmas Day. On December 26, 1992, Boxing Day, the downtown posse went to the Shortstop Mini Market on West 5th in 5th Street in Dayton. And this was a family-owned shop, and working that day was 38-year-old mother of three, Sarah Abraham.
No.
First, Laura Taylor walked in to see how busy the store was, and then after she left, Smith and Keene, the two men, went inside. They shot Sarah twice in the head, and there was another patron in the store, a man named Jones Pettis, and they also shot him twice, once in the hand and once in the stomach, but thankfully he did survive.
Oh my God, being shot in the stomach, that sounds awful. Because you probably will survive, but you'll be not in good standing after something like that. You're going to have lots of issues for a long time.
Yeah, but he did survive, but unfortunately, Sarah passed away 5 days later from her injuries.
Oh my God.
The group left the store with $44.
Because that wasn't their motive. I mean,
no.
I'm sure it like maybe started out as that. Like, oh, we should start robbing people. Like, we don't have money. We don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
But then somebody introduced this other idea and they ran with it.
Yeah. So detectives arrived at the crime scene. They found the place ransacked and obviously blood everywhere. And while they began processing evidence, they found 25 caliber shell casings. Mm. So that immediately made them think of the Danita Gillette murder from two days prior from Christmas Eve. Right. So they were kind of like already like, this is interesting.
Because that's not like a, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of my wheelhouse here, but I feel like a 25 is not really a common gun to use. Like,
definitely not my wheelhouse, but just from like, you know, all the stories we've done, I feel like we don't hear that as often.
No, it's kind of, it's because it's a smaller caliber. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if how common it is, but at least at this point, they were like, there have been several murders and now it's the same caliber gun.
Yeah.
This time, police actually had a witness.
Oh yeah.
So not only was the guy that got shot, but there was another person in the store, a 71-year-old man who sometimes worked as an employee there.
Oh my gosh.
He had been shot at, but the bullets missed hitting him completely. So he wasn't even hit, but he was smart. Once he was shot at, he basically laid down on the ground and pretended to be dead.
Okay. And they probably weren't like thoughtful enough to check for pulses.
They weren't. And so the group didn't realize that he had not been killed. He hadn't even actually been hit. So they left.
Mm.
So this man was able to tell police what happened. He said a young woman, Laura, who obviously they didn't know her name at the time, but that's who it was.
Right.
Had come into the store and attempted to make a purchase, but was a nickel short. So he gave her a nickel to finish the purchase. She did and walked out. Right after she left, the two men, DeMarcus Smith and Marvellous Keene, came in holding handguns.
Jeez.
They demanded money from the cash register. And just like with Danita, Sarah Abraham completely complied, gave them all the money. But despite her cooperation, they shot her in the face.
Oh my God.
They then shot the patron in the store, Jones Pettis, and they shot at this witness, but didn't hit him. And then they fled the scene. This crime scene was immediately suspicious, and Dayton homicide detective Doyle Burke was kind of starting to think that maybe this was more than a robbery.
Yeah.
They were like, why had, you know, the suspects shot at people and killed people if everybody had complied, given them the money, done everything as the witness said?
Right.
This is when police began to question if the motive was more than robbery. But at this point, the downtown posse's rampage was still not over. There were two other members of the group, 16-year-old Wendy Cottrell and 18-year-old Marvin Washington, and these two would be the final victims of this horrific murder spree.
Oh my gosh, you're going to do that to your... I mean, it's not good to do it to anybody, but like do it to your quote-unquote own? Like, wow.
And they did it because they thought that they were witnesses. They knew some of what the other four members had been up to.
So they were could scared.
Implicate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting snitched on. Yeah.
Heather Matthews would later say that they decided to, quote, eliminate the two since they considered them potential snitches.
Wow.
So after committing the murders at the mini mart, they drove and picked up Wendy and Marvin, purchased some beer and wine, and drove out for a while, getting out of the main part of town. Eventually, Keene claimed he needed to use the restroom, so they pulled over onto a gravel yard on Richley Drive. They parked the car, and that's when they forced Wendy and Marvin out of the car at gunpoint, forced them to crouch down behind a large pile of dirt, and executed them.
Wow, that's so fucked up.
Keene, Smith, Matthews, and Taylor then fled the scene. At this point, they needed to find a new car. So they had initially stolen Joseph Wilkerson's car, right, and then they had been stealing other cars and like switching plates around to try to avoid getting caught. Okay. And they needed to do so again. So they pulled into a gas station on Salem Avenue and pulled a gun on a woman getting gas. She likely would have been a seventh victim, but she took off running and they ended up not, even though they shot at her, they did not hit her.
Jeez, they're just doing this like out in public?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're stupid. There's no way they thought they were going to get away with this. There's no way.
I know. And I feel like at this point they were probably like on a high on like, we haven't gotten caught yet, so we're just going to keep going. Like, yeah.
Like natural born killers.
Yeah. But yeah, so they stole this woman's car. They swapped the license plates and they took off. At this point, police were starting to connect all of these different murders that were happening in Dayton. They later would analyze all of the bullets and be able to like definitively connect them. But at this point, Dayton homicide detective Burke said, quote, "The fact that it was truly stranger on stranger crime, which is the most difficult homicide to solve, made it so much more difficult. There was not even a motive."
Do they suspect any like drug use was occurring, or?
I don't think so. I did not see anything about drug use.
Okay, because you know that can make people just
really
do things like that.
I don't think I
came across anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think that was it.
Okay, okay, great.
But finally, they had something to directly connect to the group that was reported. The carjacking.
Right.
So while still at the mini mart crime scene, Detective Burke got a call about this carjacking in the same neighborhood. And the victim of the carjacking was able to recall that two men with guns threatened her, one saying, "You will die today." Jeez. So that's when she took off running and they shot at her. And because they shot at her, they were able to find the bullets.
Yeah.
And they were belonged to a 25 caliber gun, matching the mini mart shooting and the murder of Danita Gillette. The suspects of the carjacking also had the same description as the men who had robbed and shot up the mini mart. So evidence was now tying together two murders, one attempted murder because of the surviving mini mart victim, and the carjacking. And the connected suspects were two men with matching descriptions. And now they had something more definitive to look for, this car. Because, I mean, obviously having a witness account or, you know, right. some seeing a person is like, that's great. But having a car, that's easier to identify.
Mm-hmm.
Local dispatch called out a be on the lookout for a four-door black shadow. And dispatch said, quote, if located, detain and contact the homicide squad.
Wow.
Dayton Police Sergeant John Huber was on patrol when he spotted a car matching that of the stolen vehicle. He didn't know that the drivers were connected to the murders. You know, obviously they probably suspected it, but like they didn't know for sure. But he called in a plate check on the car and it didn't match. So he knew that the car was stolen. They were able to trace the plates back to a car belonging to Joseph Wilkerson. So they had been swapping plates with other cars, but they had still managed to keep the initial plates from Joseph Wilkerson's car. So because of this, investigators went to his house to talk to him.
Okay.
When they arrived, they were greeted by a foul smell.
No. Oh, my God.
They entered the home, found the place ransacked, and when they went into the bedroom, they found Joseph Wilkerson still bound to the bed, dead with gunshot wounds.
And they decomposing.
It had only been 2 days, but...
Yeah, but still. Yeah. They could smell it from outside. God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
They found 25 caliber shell casings, just like with the mini mart, with Danita, and with the carjacking. And then a tip came in, because at this point, they have descriptions of the suspect, they have the car that's stolen, but they don't know names. They don't know who these people are.
And they're just being careless, so like people are seeing them left and right.
Mm-hmm. But this tip came in by somebody who knew the group. A man named Nicholas Woodson called the police with information about a group called the Downtown Posse. He said it was a group of teenagers and young adults who were high school dropouts. He said the group had all run away from home and were surviving on the streets, staying wherever they could. And he said that recently they had been bragging about murders they had committed, talking openly about the crimes.
So sick.
Woodson was afraid for his life. So he went to the police to report what these four had been talking about. He gave investigators the four members' names. And when Detective Burke heard the name Laura Taylor, he immediately recognized it because he had spoken to her family after the murder of Richmond Maddox. Initially, investigators had thought that she was missing and possibly in danger, but according to Nicholas Woodson, not only was she involved, but she was one of the main killers, and she was working to recruit people to join the group. So she was an active participant.
She sounded to be like the youngest, basically. Mm-hmm. She sounds like she was the one whose maybe idea was.
Possibly. I think it was more Marvellous Keene's idea.
Her boyfriend?
Yeah. But she was definitely like fully participating.
All about it, yeah.
Police brought Nicholas Woodson in so they could talk to him, learn about all the details they could get from him. He had heard the group talk about Richmond Maddox's murder. So he said that Laura Taylor was the one who had run away from the car after shooting Richmond. And when Nicholas Woodson said that he basically said to them, you shouldn't have done that, they just all started laughing. Like, they thought it was funny.
Yeah, of course. So it's like a game.
Yeah. While Woodson was being interviewed by police officers, Sergeant Huber was out surveilling the shadow. Eventually, people entered the car and started driving, and he pulled them over. immediately when he started pulling them over, somebody got out and ran. He didn't have backup, though, so he let that person go while he tried to apprehend the others in the car. It was later revealed that Laura Taylor, so the two in the car were Laura Taylor and Marvellous Keene, and it was later revealed that Laura had been telling Marvellous to shoot Sergeant Huber, but Keene didn't follow through.
Good,
don't
he
know
knew
why, but
he
yeah,
was like,
he was like, I'm not shooting an officer.
Yeah, that's I mean, obviously they're killing innocent people, and that's awful and very much punishable in any court of law. But I feel like when you kill a police officer, that's a whole other level of,
yeah,
they're going to throw the book at you.
So Laura Taylor and Marvellous Keene were arrested without further incident, and Keene was wearing Danita Gullett's jacket that
so
he had stolen
sick
from her. The one who had run away was DeMarcus Smith, but officers were able to arrest him about 15 minutes later, along with Heather Matthews. Smith was wearing Danita Gullett's shoes.
Wow.
When searching the car after the arrest, officers found both the 25 caliber gun and the 32 caliber gun. Marvellous Keene, Laura Taylor, DeMarcus Smith, and Heather Matthews were all finally arrested. By this point, investigators had connected all of the murders and shootings. They had analyzed the bullets, so they were, you know, definitively connected. They found the guns. They were able to connect all of these. But they hadn't yet connected or even found those last two victims.
Because they were just on, like, a gravel road somewhere,
and
right?
It's unclear if Marvin had been reported missing, but Wendy had been, like, reported missing by her family. But so again, I don't think it was super, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think it was super urgent of, like, we think she was taken. It was more of, like, we want to find her and we're worried about her, but it's not like we think she was abducted.
Right. I wonder if her family knew that they were associated with these people.
Yeah, they might have. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
When the four were arrested, no one was talking. Detective Burke later recalled that while interviewing 16-year-old Laura Taylor, they were trying to make her comfortable by saying, you know, do you need water? Do you need to use the restroom? Trying to make her feel comfortable so she would talk. But instead of saying yes, she stood up and just started urinating right there.
Oh, my God. See, that's just like, I don't even know what that is, but... It's just like they were like, let's just be as problematic, chaotic, feral as possible.
It really does seem like that.
And then like, okay, now we're caught. No one talk.
Yeah.
You know, like no one talk and just do the like most ridiculous, obscene things you can to like get them to stop questioning you.
Yeah. No, it was ridiculous.
So disgusting. Have some fucking respect for yourself. Never mind everybody else. Like, to pull your pants down in front of, I'm assuming, probably two grown men and maybe a woman for, I mean, it was 92, so maybe not a woman there. But, you know, times have changed in that sense. But, ew. And you're 16, dude.
I know. And that just shows you the state of mind that she was in and like, but she didn't care. She was just doing this because she wanted to.
Yeah, like a big fuck you. I can do what I want.
Yeah. Eventually, the other three kind of began talking. So they didn't full on admit to what they had done, but they were kind of saying things and talking that, you know, police were piecing together what had happened.
Were they, like, pointing fingers at each other, or was it...
Yes. Okay. So, Heather Matthews told police that Keene and Taylor were the ones that came up with the plan and the idea to rob Joseph Wilkerson. So, she said it was all their idea. After they had tied him to the bed, Marvellous Keene came in and sent the girls out of the room and then shot him in the chest. Marvellous did admit in his police interview to shooting Joseph, and he also claimed or talked about how they found the 32 caliber gun in the house. And then he said that Laura Taylor had been the one to take the gun and shoot Joseph a second time.
Wow.
He claimed that the motive in the shootings was initially to get money, but that it went too far. But it was so clear to police that there was more to it than that. They just wanted to kill.
Yeah.
Laura Taylor was really the only one that was not talking to police. She was visited by a local minister. This minister was convinced that she couldn't have done what she was accused of, so he wanted to go talk with her. And that's when she started talking.
Did he know her personally, or is he just like...
No, I don't think so. I think he was kind of just like, there's no way this 16-year-old girl did this. I'm going to go talk to her.
That is so not the case, buddy.
No. But this, it was good he did, because she started talking, and she revealed to him that the group had murdered two more victims, Wendy and Marvin.
Oh.
She told him that they were killed because the group thought they would snitch to the police. And the minister recalled that she was talking about it in a bragging manner, like she was proud of what they'd done.
I think she was very proud of everything that she did.
Yeah. After the minister told police this new information, they went and searched that gravel road. And that's when they found the bodies of Wendy and Marvin.
So sad.
In all, the group attempted 8 murders, 2 victims survived, and 6 passed away from their injuries. And I would argue that they actually attempted 10 murders, because the 8 attempted murders include the 2 that were shot and survived. But there were also 2 others, the witness in the mini mart and the carjacking victim.
Yeah.
That
they just missed.
Shot at, they just missed. So I would argue that they attempted 10 murders.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely argue that as well.
Heather Matthews was indicted on 2 counts of aggravated murder for aiding and abetting. She made a plea deal to serve 2 consecutive life terms in turn for testifying against the other 3 at trial.
That was her deal? 2 life terms?
Yeah. So even though she made this plea deal, she was still sentenced to over 180 years in prison.
Damn.
I think maybe the plea was to get away from the death penalty.
Was she an adult? She was 18.
She was.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Fuck.
Laura Taylor and DeMarcus Smith were both indicted on several counts of aggravated murder. They initially were pleading not guilty. Smith was about to go to trial. Like, the day his trial was supposed to start, changed his plea to guilty.
Yep. That's what they always do that. Because they're like, you know what? Let me think about this for a second. I'm not getting away with this.
And in the episode I watched, they said he did so probably hoping, like, he'd get a reduced sentence. And then they were like, he didn't.
Good.
So it was really funny.
But, yeah, maybe if he took a plea deal in the beginning, they might have given him a better opportunity. But yeah, come on, dude. Transparent as fuck.
Yeah. Both Taylor and Smith were sentenced to over 180 years in prison. Marvellous Keene, who was dubbed the leader of the downtown posse, was convicted of 6 counts of aggravated murder and was sentenced to death. Apparently, the only time Taylor and Keene showed any emotion during their trials was when they were being sentenced.
I bet.
On July 21st, 2009, after 17 years of appeals, Marvellous Keene was executed.
Wow.
When given the chance to share last words, he simply said, "No, I have no words."
Yikes.
Currently, Laura Taylor and Heather Matthews are serving their sentences at the Ohio Reformatory for Women, and DeMarcus Smith is serving at the Mansfield Correctional Institute. Now, unfortunately, Laura Taylor became eligible for parole in 2021 after new laws about life sentences for crimes committed by minors were enacted. So because she was 16 at the time of the murders, these new laws allowed her to become eligible for parole.
Well, hopefully she'll get denied. Or maybe, I don't know.
No, I don't think she ever does. I don't care if she is reformed. I don't think she deserves to be out. She was denied parole in 2021, and she will next become eligible in 2026.
And so she's what, like 40 something now?
Yeah, she was 16 in 92. And that was, no, she's like 50 something now. She's 47. You were right.
Yes.
So she'll next become eligible for parole when she's like 50.
Okay. So she's pretty much, I mean, if she did get parole, it's not like she's going to, I mean, she could still like get a job and like maybe meet a man or a lady or whatever she's into. But as far as like really having a full life, I mean, I feel like she's kind of, that ship has sailed.
Yeah. But still, she doesn't deserve to be let out, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Heather Matthews spoke from prison in 2000 about how she got involved with the murders, and she claimed she just wanted to be part of a group, saying, quote, "I wanted to be like them. I wanted to do what they were doing."
Right. You wanted to be killing. You just didn't have the gall to actually do it.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm glad you didn't, but
yeah.
You're just but as guilty. Still,
yeah.
Yeah.
And she basically got the same sentence.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's if you want to be part of a group, I guarantee you there was probably at least 77 other groups that you could have been a part of.
Yeah.
So
I think so too.
I don't feel sorry for you. I don't. I've gotten involved with the wrong kind of people before, and I knew exactly what I was doing, and luckily I was smart enough to get myself out of it before. I mean, it wasn't that crazy. It wasn't like a killer group, you know, serial killer group or anything like that, but
yeah,
you know, but you just gotta not stay in it, or maybe if they start killing people, be like, yeah, this is not police. For me. Like, I'm just gonna leave now.
And so you still were involved. Go to the
police. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Joseph Wilkerson, Danita Gillette, Richmond Maddox, Sarah Abraham, Wendy Cottrell, and Marvin Washington lost their lives in December 1992 for absolutely no reason.
Nope.
The downtown posse wanted to kill, and the rampage they went on left the town of Dayton, Ohio, shocked. These were such senseless murders, and this group of killers was just so sick in what they did. Detective Burke later said they were all willing participants, saying, quote, "They enjoyed it. They lived it. It made them somebody."
Yeah, well, look how it turned out. Was it worth it? That's what I always want to know. Was it worth it? In their minds, was it worth it? You know? Because they probably would say no.
Probably not, the way they reacted to their sentences.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they are paying for what they did, but that does not bring the victims back.
No, it doesn't.
Rhonda Gillette, Danita's sister, said in 2017 that even 25 years later, the holidays are still difficult for her.
Yeah, so unfair.
And her sister's murder led to many other tragedies in her life. Her relationship with her fiancé ended, and her mother passed away just 6 years later from grief. She said her mom died from a broken heart.
That's so sad.
Now, Rhonda is working to advocate for victims' rights. She said, quote, "I grieve for my family, but I continue to grieve for the other victims' families and also the people who are incarcerated. Anybody's life can either go to the left or the right. So I do. I think about them very often."
Yeah. And what about her daughter? Is she?
I couldn't find anything about Danita's daughter. I'm guessing she was probably with family because it seemed like they were a close family.
Yeah. But
so freaking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Rhonda says that she now gets through the holiday season by serving at her church and feeding the homeless. Mm. So she's really doing everything she can to make sure her life counts and make sure something good comes from this.
Yeah.
The Christmas killings were the worst crime spree in Dayton history. And like we've said, it is just so freaking senseless, so tragic, and just so crazy that these young people just went on this absolutely horrific rampage.
They just threw their whole entire lives away. I mean,
yeah. So that is the story of the Dayton Christmas killings. It's so heartbreaking. I mean, I'm glad that they got caught and that they were so messy that they were able to be connected to every single crime and get caught for it and get charged with all that they did. But it's so heartbreaking. And, you know, they've, from all the sources, the town of Dayton still is like haunted by this.
I bet. And their poor families.
Yeah.
Because imagine the backlash that they got after.
I'm sure so much.
Their children. I mean, at the same time, though, you know, children are often a reflection of their parents. And it sounds like maybe their home lives weren't that great.
But you never know. They could have just been rebellious teens and wanted to leave. I mean, Laura Taylor's family were like, we want her to be found. It's not like they were just like, whatever, she's off on her own.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just so heartbreaking.
It is, all the way around.
But that's all we have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you soon with a new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.